Hi, welcome to another. God, I all of a sudden forgot what I was going to say. Well, my name is Ms. Parker, and I am currently looking for my my disclaimer to read to you guys, but I can't find it. So hold on a minute. This is RV Project Help, and we're doing a loose recording, chat recording. And the topic that I was just asked about is so important that I am going to, I'm recording this. So I am trying to get my disclaimer up there so I can read it to you.
I got you. It's there already.
You got it already? Okay.
Yeah, it's there. There you go.
Oh, beautiful. God bless America. Thank you. This is my disclaimer liability. You'd think I could remember it and read it by off from memory, but no, I have to have it. Hi, my name is Ms. Parker, and the material and information contained or given on this website or audio file is for general information only. All parties on this channel are not lawyers or financial advisors. We're fictional advisors. You are using this information with your own discretion. You should not rely on the material or information on this website or audio file as a basis for making any business decisions. While I do endeavor to keep the information as up-to-date and correct as possible, RV Project Help makes no representations or warranties of any kind, expressed or implied, about the completeness, accuracy, reliability, suitability, or availability with respect to the website or the information, products, services, or related graphics contained on the website or the audio file for any purpose. All due diligence is the responsibility of the participant. Okay, so the question is about giving money to somebody, whether you should put it in a trust or whether you should just give a bill out. That's a very big, very, very important question. And it's one of the questions I get almost every single day. There are a lot of caveats to that question, okay? So in the first example is you've got a friend, a husband, a worker, somebody in your family, somebody in your life that's important to you. And up until this thing happened with the RV, you guys got along great. The problem is they are completely, completely blue-pilled. They do not believe this happens. They think you're crazy as a pet coon. They just think you're off your freaking rocker, okay? You cannot give money to them. The reason being is they'll tear it up. I had one of the guys I know, his wife got so disgusted with what he was doing. He went to work and she took all of his currency and put it in the fireplace and burned it. He almost had a freaking heart attack. So if you have a spouse or a family member that you want to gift and they are completely, completely, completely blue-pilled, do not use this as an opportunity to wake them up. Instead, figure out what bill you're going to do, go in an RV, find out, ask them specifically, hey, this is a 1 million bill. What is this bill worth? And they'll give you a number. You write that down. You're going to take some of the things you're going to take in there with you besides your binder is you're going to take a little notebook and brand new blue ink pens so that you can write stuff down. Make sure they work. Go get a pack, brand new ones. Make sure they're brand new. Make sure they work. Okay. In your little booklet, you're going to write down, my mind froze on me. I'm sorry, folks.
I'm going to write down how much each bill is going to.
Thank you. God bless you, Sabrina. You're going to write down how much each bill. I'm sorry, folks. I have a little disability. My brain stops like that. You're going to write down how much each bill is worth. So say you want to give a 10 trillion bill to Cousin Sue, and you want to give a 1 million bill to Cousin Bill, and you want to give a 50 million to, you know, Auntie Edna. Okay. So you're not going to remember what those bills are worth when you leave. And if they put all the money into one account, it's going to make it a lot harder. So have a little notebook, write down how much one single bill is. When you get out of the RV, whether or not they make you use your skeleton trust, you're going to go to a trust lawyer after that. And you're going to set up a trust for that person, that blue-pilled person, and it's going to be you and that person if you are still friends, if you're still talking. If you are not talking at all, then it's not going to be you. What you want is you want to put a lawyer on that. And you want their interaction to be with you and that lawyer. So that if they get mad about the amount they're getting or anything like that, they get mad at the lawyer, not you. Okay. The same thing, even more so, if you have somebody that's an addict. If you have a brother that's an addict and a sister that's not an addict, you do not want to make your relationship with that family member worse. So the solution for that is to get yourself out of it. Put it in a trust, meet with that person on the first available day and say, look, I have money for you that's in a trust. It's going to help you because you are addicted to alcohol. I'm not going to oversee this trust. This lawyer right here, he's going to oversee it. You have 3 hours a week that you can call and use to talk to this lawyer. We're going to give you a house and we're going to inspect the house. If you can keep the house up for 5 years, which means doing the laundry, making sure the yards are done, just basic taking care of a house. And you do not get stupid, insane drunk over the next 5 years. After 5 years, you can have this house. We'll give it to you. We will give you an income and you'll have volunteer work that you can do. Or if you'd like to have your own project, you can bring that up as well. I don't care which. If you do your volunteer work, you will get paid an allowance once a week. If you choose not to do your volunteer work, that's okay too. Today, we're going to have you pick a humanitarian project that your salary that you would normally get will be donated to. So the money's going to be paid out no matter what you do. You can either do the right thing and you'll have the money, or you can totally motherfucking fuck up. And then this organization that you're going to pick today, they're going to think you're the best thing since sliced bread because your money, the lawyer will send your check to this organization in your name. And they're going to think you donated it and that you're wonderful. So you can choose to live a life of debauchery. You can choose to stay drunk every fucking day. You're going to get your house paid, but nothing else more than that. You won't get your salary. You'll have food. You'll have electricity, but you won't get your salary. You won't have any extra money. Or you can do the right thing. Pull yourself out of addiction. Go to a med bed. Med beds will cure the addictions, we've been told. You can go to a med bed and get yourself sober. Do the right thing for 5 years and no problem. I'll sign over the house to you. You'll have ownership of the house. The lawyer will oversee your trust for 20 years. And after that, it'll be yours. You'll have 20 years of good service and doing the right thing, and there shouldn't be a problem. But I'm not going to fight with you. I'm not going to argue with you. You're not going to go out and get motherfucking drunk and then come back, I need money. You hate me. You hate me. You don't give me any money. No, you're not going to do that shit to me. I'm your sister. You're going to talk to me normal. If you have an issue with money, you go talk to the lawyer. You take yourself completely out of the war zone. And if you have an addict in your family, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So do not be the one giving the addict the money. Do it through a lawyer. Do it through a trust with a lawyer. When you set the trust up, put the bill in the trust, and then you tell the lawyer, here's $500,000. He only can talk to you 3 hours a week, or she can only talk to you 3 hours a week. If they want to spend more than 3 hours a week, you hang up the phone because you're not getting paid more than 3 hours a week. The lawyer will do everything you need them to do. I was in this exact situation. I had a cousin who was a total fuck up, and he had a wife and 4 kids. And why the hell is it the people that are the biggest fuck ups, they have the nicest spouses? I don't understand this. I don't get this, but that just seems to happen that way. Well, his wife was amazing. And he was a total fuck up. And in the beginning, I put aside $2.5 million for him. And I said, you know, this is for you to get straight, blah, 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 blah. And my life became a living fucking shit show. Because every time he went through his allowance, usually by Wednesday, he was on the phone screaming at me for more money. Never again. Never, 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 never again. Do it all through the lawyer. Get yourself out of that position of being the bad guy. Unfortunately, same thing is true with your kids. Now, nobody will admit publicly that they have done a bad job with their kids and that they raised spoiled, rotten kids. You, in your heart of hearts, you know what your kid is like. You know. Be honest with yourself. If you've got a child that is spoiled, that will not listen to you, doesn't want to go along with the program, is bucking you every inch of the way, then you do the exact same thing. You set up a trust for the child and you set it up for a lawyer to oversee with the child. Because the last thing you want to do is ruin your relationship with your family members. And I'm telling you right now, folks, you will regret if you don't do it. You will absolutely regret it, because it turns into a war. It turns into a war with the family. I had funds. I didn't want to give it to one of my family members. Here we go. I'll just fucking tell you. Fuck. Okay, we're going to light a joint for this one, because this is a fucked up conversation. I am adopted. I was adopted at 4 days old, and I was sold in the black market. Actually, it was called the gray market. And I'm actually born in Hawaii. I was born before Hawaii was a state, 2 days before Hawaii was a state. And I was smuggled to California, and my birth certificate is false. And I found that out when I was in my late 30s. So the people that I thought were my brothers, the two younger children that were born in the family that I was in, they are actually not my brothers. They are the blood children of the people that adopted me. And the reason why I want to make really, 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 really clear that I'm adopted is because those motherfucking people are not my blood, okay? Not my blood. I have one brother, the youngest brother, who was my hero. He was a motocross racer, and I loved him. I ride bikes like a boy. I'm the only girl in my generation of 19 children, actually 20, including me. And all my cousins were all outlaws, Hells Angels and stuff. I can ride as fast as any boy on a bike, and I love it. My youngest brother was a motocross racer, and it was absolutely my pride and joy to take. I was old enough I could take him to races and stuff. So the day I turned 15, when you're an ag kid, you can get your license at 15. I began driving my youngest brother to motocross races on Sundays. He was my hero. The other brother, not my blood, not related, child of my adopted parents. He's a fucking child molester. He's a child rapist. And I really feel that child rapists need to be hung on a noose until dead. And I had zero problems telling my adopted parents I felt the same way. So as you can guess, this didn't go over well with my family. So I had a massive, massive, massive grow. And I walked away with $15 million. And I set up my youngest brother with $2 million. And my adopted parents immediately were up my ass about why I didn't do it for Scotty. And I said, because I think child molesters need to die. Well, that went over like a rock. And from that point on, anything that happened, that fucker would run to my parents and tell stories about what I wasn't doing for him. Most of the stuff was an outrageous lie. So it got to the point where I couldn't be around my adopted parents, and it started to affect the other brother that I had a great relationship with. So I set up an account for him, and thinking that would make it go away. No. It just made it worse. So I've done this, and I'm going to tell you right now, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Do not do it. Because it will literally make your life a living, fucking, breathing hell if you fund somebody that you can't stand. Have the lawyers deal with it if you're going to do it at all. But don't do it, folks. Just don't do it. Because they will spin shit
and they will cause you more fucking grief, because a person that is going to do bad things to kids has zero qualms about saying or doing bad things to you. So this time when I go up, I prayed about it. I prayed about it. I did. I didn't have a good relationship with God for many years, because my mother's mother, my adopted mother's mother, she used God as a weapon. And used to tell us all kinds of horrible things, to the point where, fuck, I didn't want to know God. He might fucking kill me. Then I grew up, been through a lot of shit, and I've survived a lot of shit. And I really, truly believe that by the grace of God, I'm standing here today. I think God saved me from a lot of things. And I think God had a bigger plan for me. And I think that's why I'm still standing. So I had to pray. And I really suck at praying, because I talk to God kind of like I talk to you guys. I'm just really blunt. And I think God knows I'm an imperfect person. But I think God loves me anyway. And so I prayed, because I didn't know what to do with my family governance. And I hate child molesters. I hate child molesters. I hate child rapists. I tried to run him over with a tractor. That was the day I figured, you know, I really need to leave California, because you're going to go in prison for this. So I left California. But I prayed about it, because I really didn't know the answer. And you're not supposed to have hate in your heart. And it was towering hate. So I prayed. And I was able to forgive him. But I absolutely cannot forgive. God doesn't say, nothing in the Bible I could find said that you have to bless somebody that has done something bad to a child. In fact, I found this really cool part that said, if you hurt a child, you should have a millstone around your neck. I liked that part. So I decided in my family governance that I was not going to have him in there. My other brother, I'm going to give him $1 million a year. The child molester, I'm going to give him $1. Because I forgive him, I won't forget. So that's how I'm going to handle that. There's so much of life that you need to consider. The good stuff and the bad stuff. Because when you get this kind of wealth, it's going to hit you like a ton of bricks. Everybody's going to have their hand out, and people that you don't even know are going to have their hand out. And the people that are going to be the hardest on you are the ones that you love the most. So, deal with it as you will. But my best advice to you is, if you have any kind of issues with anybody that you're going to give money to, or they have personal issues, then do it through a trust and a lawyer. Don't just give them the money. Don't just give them the bill. Protect them from themselves. If it's someone in your family that you can't stand because they've done something terrible, 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 ask God to help you forgive them. Because it's really hard to do it on your own. I don't talk about these subjects in my regular life. I open myself up to criticism by having these conversations and talking about my past, talking about how I've dealt with things. I know people will put me down for it, and I know people will thank me for it. There's only one reason I do this, people. There's only one reason. And that's because I want every single person that's listening to this video, listening to this audio, to be the very best humanitarian you can be. The very best. And if that means talking about fucking painful shit so that you don't make the same mistakes and you end up hating having the money, which some people do, you have a better shot at getting this kind of blessing and then walking away with your feet underneath of you. Because the first 30 days, the first 60 days are going to be the roughest time of your life. It's going to be really, really good, you know, wonderfully overwhelming. But when the sea comes back, it comes back high. So there's going to be a lot of difficulty that you don't even realize that wealth is going to bring to you. If I can help you in some way by telling you what has happened to me and the choices I made, good and bad, I'll tell on myself. If I make fucked up choices, I'll tell you, because I don't fucking care. I'm just not going to do that again. But if I can help you with not making a stupid mistake, then that's why I'm talking. Most people in my life don't know most of the things that I talk about in these audios, because you are my tools to kill the deep state. You are the tools. Every single one of you that does a humanitarian project, that's one person that's going to change our life for the better. That's one person that's going to change our nation for the better. Or if you're from another country, you're going to make your country better. And that means all of us together will change the world. We will take out all of these fake humanitarian companies. I mean, look at the Clinton Foundation. That's just a front for child trafficking. That's just a front to sell kids. When all of us are doing the right thing and we're actually putting our money into the world the way it's supposed to be to actually help the world, we are killing the deep state. We are taking them out. We are taking their places. We are taking their lies and making them truth. That's why I do this. I don't get any money to do this. I mean, my truck wasn't working. I told you guys, and you guys went insane, and you put money together so I can get my truck fixed tomorrow. But other than that, I didn't want any money. What I wanted is for you to be the best you can be. Because when you're the best, it leaves little place for darkness to hide. Really emotional today, sorry. I'm super excited because I believe we're going to get our numbers within the next 48 hours. But I'm also scared to death because we're going to get our numbers in the next, I believe we're going to get our numbers very soon. There's still a lot to do. So, is there any other questions you want me to ask when I have the opportunity to ask?
I have a question.
Shoot.
Okay. My daughter and I were going to do this together. We were going to go to the appointment together, and she's older, mature. She's 45. No problems with her. Is that okay? And then we're going to put it in a trust?
Absolutely. I'm talking about a child who is under the age of 26.
Okay. Understand.
Yeah. Much different. She's an adult. She's got her, you know that she's on point. So
yeah, she's good. Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it.
One more for you.
You bet.
I guess I lied. I did have something else. So your contact that actually RV'd, so it's there in the account, but did you say there's no access to that in real time?
No access.
Or is there a grace or waiting period?
There's no access to it until T4 goes. And okay, I asked him, did you ask when T4 goes? He goes, no, I don't care about T4. I just want to know when I'm getting mine. And he says, but they did say that it would be within 10 days. So he's believing it's going to be within 10 days. I look back at notes and stuff I've taken through other things. And most of the information I had from other people said that within 72 hours, once it starts, I reached out to somebody else who I believe has serious knowledge. And I asked them if they thought the 72-hour information was correct. I have not heard back from him. The 72-hour thing is something I'm absolutely going to ask him about again when I have the opportunity.
Okay, and the email you read earlier, that was from late last week? Or nope, the information you read?
Yesterday. Yesterday at 3 o'clock.
Oh, yesterday. Holy smokes. Okay, cool. Thank you. That was all. Thank you.
Yeah.
Hi. I got a question too. My question is, I've heard that we are also going to get diplomatic passports. Do you know anything about that? Because we are going to change our status into sovereign.
I don't know anything about that. I've been looking into that. In America, I know that I want a diplomatic passport and the cost to get, it's a $5,000 fee to get one. I don't know the steps to getting one. I was actually discussing that with someone today, and I'll have more information on that in the next couple of days.
Well, it would be great if you could ask. As you know, I'm from Europe, so maybe you can just take that into consideration.
Yeah, well, I did get some information on passports, so hold on. Let me pull this thing up just a minute, please. So there are countries and places that that will give you passports even if you're not from that country. There's ways in, you can buy in, or you can own property, or you can put businesses in them. So if you can't get a diplomatic passport, if you're not from the United States, you can't get a U.S. diplomatic passport. There are other passports that will help you. And if you are from the United States and for some reason you can't get a diplomatic passport, you might want to listen to this. The first one is Liechtenstein, Liechtenstein, Liechtenstein. This is a country that's double landlocked by German, and it's a German-speaking microstate in Central Europe. It is a constitutional monarchy, and it's ruled by the Prince of Liechtenstein. Now, with all the royals being put to death, I don't know, because this country is so tiny, if the prince was involved. It is simply 160 square kilometers. Americans, that's about 80 square miles. And it has an estimated population of about 35,000. It has the highest gross domestic product per person in the world. It is the second richest country in the world after Qatar. If you have a Liechtenstein passport, you can enter 159 countries without a visa. That is a passport that I believe you can get if you live in Liechtenstein for a certain amount of years or have an address there. The next one is Malaysia and Malta. Malaysia and Malta, you can visit 163 countries. It, again, is a federal constitution monarchy, and it is in Southeast Asia. It has 13 states, 3 federal territories.
It's a country with over 30 million people, and it's the third most populated country in the world. The capital city is Kuala Lumpur. I don't know if I'm mangling that. Kuala Lumpur.
You're saying it correct. Kuala Lumpur.
Oh, thank you. I had no idea. It looks like Greek to me. The next one is Malta. And Malta is an archipelago island off the Mediterranean Sea. It is 316 kilometers or 118 square miles. It has a population of 450,000. It's one of the world's most smallest and densest countries. That passport also allows you into 163 countries. Many of these passports, if you live there for a certain amount of time, you can become a sovereign and get a passport. Many times, if you have a business, you can do that as well. What I did is I got information on each one of these areas, and I haven't dug deep to find out which ones I can actually get a passport in if I'm an American citizen. Every country has different things. So I can't tell you can get a passport in it if you're not from America or if you are from America. I haven't figured out which countries qualify. All I have is the information about the countries themselves, and these are the most powerful passports in the world. The next one is Iceland. Iceland is beautiful. Greenland is full of ice. I don't know what the fuck they were doing thinking these. Iceland's passport is 165 countries. And it's in the Arctic, between the Arctic Ocean and the North Atlantic. It's one of the most sparsest populated countries in all of Europe. It has a population of 329,000. Most of them live in the capital city, whose name I'm not even going to try to say.
Reykjavik.
I really do love you, Brian. Thank you. Reykjavik. I didn't have a chance in hell of knowing how to say that one.
Yep, Reykjavik. Beautiful place.
Oh, you've been there? Oh, dang it. That's on my to-do list, is going to Iceland. The restrictions of Icelandic citizens are authorized by other states placed on the citizens of Iceland. So people from Iceland had visa-free or visa-on-arrival access to 165 countries, and it's considered one of the 8th great passports in the world. South Korea, gee, go figure. South Korea is amazing. You can visit 166 countries in South Korea. You all know where it is. Seoul? S-E-O-U-L, Seoul or Seoul?
Seoul, Korea. Yep, been there as well.
America. I got geniuses on here. They have 25 million residents. Their passports are issued to citizens to facilitate international travel. I don't think that this is a country that you can get a passport easily from, but if you're from there, it's pretty cool. Those of you that are in Australia is a strong, strong, strong passport. It's one of the best. Australia, Singapore, and Greece, all three of them can visit 167 countries. All three of them can visit 167 countries without a visa. Greece, there's just a bunch of information. It's not really important, but those are easy to get passports in, especially Australia. You can migrate to Australia if you're under the age of 42. Switzerland, Austria, and New Zealand, they can visit 168 countries. They don't have any problems, visa-free or visa on arrival. New Zealand, it's one of the last lands that was settled by humans. And so they have a major diversity with a really distinct biodiversity of animals and plant life. New Zealand is ranked fifth
in the terms of travel freedom across the world. It's tied with Switzerland and Singapore. The next one is Ireland and Irish passports. Well, it's Irish, Ireland, Canada, France, Japan, Norway, Portugal, and Spain. All those, Ireland, Canada, France, Japan, Norway, Portugal, and Spain, they can visit 170 countries. These are all world leader countries when it comes to power because of the resources of these different places. The last, there's three more. There's Italy, Belgium, and the Netherlands. They can do 171 countries. When I used to travel to Holland, to the Netherlands, I was in Amsterdam. I'm a seed strain hunter. All of the people, all my friends in the Netherlands, I mean, they were like, let's go, Park. Let's go to this country, that country, everything. And when we were over there, and like, my American passport was a pain in the ass. You had to run through all kinds of stuff to go to some of these different countries. The next passports. US, Germany, Denmark, Luxembourg, we can go to 172 countries. The US passport is a very strong passport. German, Denmark, Luxembourg, all very strong passports. Americans, you can basically live here after 10 years or marry an American and you can get a passport. I don't know how it is in Germany, Denmark, or Luxembourg, but they're very strong. And the strongest passport in the world would allow you to go any place in the world is the United Kingdom. United Kingdom ties with Sweden and Finland. And each of those passports allow you to go to 173 different countries. So if you don't have a diplomatic passport and some of these countries appeal to you, take the time to look to see how you can become a citizen of those country or how you can acquire a different passport. Hope that helps.
Good evening. I have a question. You mentioned about when Tier 4B may receive the notifications. I kind of missed the time frame. I think you mentioned about 10 days and then you mentioned 72 hours. Can you repeat that again?
Yeah, this is a recording, so you can listen to the recording.
Okay, thank you.
Anybody else have questions?
Yes.
Go ahead, please.
Yes. First of all, I want to thank you for being open and honest, and my respect for you has just elevated, and you do inspire us. I want to say that first of all. I do think that you somewhat answered my question, though, a bit earlier about the children, having your children go. My daughter also has currency, and we didn't know if we could go together or if we needed to go separately. She's all in, of course, but I didn't know if there would be any advantage either way.
Well, one of the things I'm fighting constantly is I got some fucking asshole people out there, and they are saying, oh, if you turn in one ZIM, you get this amount of money. If you turn in this ZIM, you get this amount of money. If you turn in three ZIMs, then your money goes down. If you turn in four ZIMs, then your money go down. What the fuck kind of turnip truck did they fall off of? That's the most asinine thing ever. Clearly, these people have never traveled outside of the country and come back into the country of origin. Anytime you go travel and you go to a different country, you exchange American dollars for the other country. You go to, usually at a major airport, international airport, there's going to be a currency exchange booth within feet of getting off the airport, okay? You exchange your money, you get, there's a small fee that they charge you to exchange the money. What they do not do is they do not go, oh, look, here's $100. Oh, here's another $100 bill. Oh, this is your third $100. Oh, we can only give you 15% of that third $100. Oh, here's your fifth $100. Oh, we can only give you, that's fucking bullshit. The people that are spreading that shit are full of shit. They've clearly never, ever gone internationally and done any kind of exchange. We've been told that these exchanges are going to be no different than going to an international currency exchange. if people are telling you that your money is going to be lower and lower and lower with each bill, just laugh at them. It cannot possibly be true. On the other hand, I've never done this. I've never been to an RV. I've only been told by as many people are out there that are talking about this, that this is no different than a traditional currency exchange. Especially when they're telling us you're going to be in and out in 20 minutes. If they're going to do all kinds of crazy fucking math where you have this bill and it gets deleted, and this bill gets lower and lower and lower, imagine we're going to have people that are going to go in there with stacks of 100. You know, they're going to go in with 100 bills of 100 trillion T-notes. What are they going to do? Do the math for every single one of those bills to make it less and less and less and less and less and less and less? They don't have the time to do that. It doesn't make any sense if you sit there and think logically. Okay, some people are going to come into the RV and they're going to have 5 bills. Woo! Once I'm past bill number 2, my amount is going to go lower. Some people are going to go into the RV and they're going to have 200 or 300 of the 100 trillion bills. They're not going to have the time. It's not. There's no way. If you sit and do the math and figure out how much this percentage, this percentage, this percentage, and this percentage, they're not going to have the time to do that. It makes absolutely zero sense. That's why I completely reject that and do not believe that's true. Go take your money, go to an international airport, go find a currency exchange place, take like $25 bills and go change it for another currency. They don't start lowering your $5 bills once you go past the second bill. Makes no sense. Hope that helps.
Ms. Parker, I don't have a question, but I'm relaying something from the chat. So the question here is, if Pengo will be treated as a bond, and do we have to start our project in a certain time period? And this is from T. Nice. I guess he or she cannot be heard.
Okay.
So I guess that was a two-part question. If the Pengo will be treated as a bond, and do they have to start their project in a certain time period?
Okay, let me go back to this. Okay. T-Nice, are you in the chat room? There you are. I see you in the chat room. You have a cell phone, I'm assuming. Are you on a computer? Which way? Are you on a cell phone or are you on a computer? T-Nice, are you on a cell phone or are you on a computer?
You're on. Okay.
There was a response.
It must be something wrong with my computer. I'm on the cell phone now.
Okay. The computer will not let you speak. Yeah. So please don't write messages.
Okay.
Because I can't go back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
So will Pengo be treated as a bond? I don't know. I got through telling you earlier that I only have information on 3 currencies. The information on Pengo is about as tight as a gnat's butt. Nobody is speaking about Pengo.
So okay, I thought that was something that we could ask. I'm sorry.
You can ask. I just have already given you the information. But as far as Pengo is concerned, Pengo actually gives me concern. And the reason why it gives me concern is Pengo is less information available on Pengo than there is on Bolivar. So I don't know if that means Pengo is going to go higher than Bolivar or if that means Pengo will not be good at all. I don't think it's going to be in the middle. It's going to be either really, really good or really, really bad, and I don't know. As far as do we have to start our projects at a certain time period, I don't believe you have to, but I don't know. What I'm going to do is when I go to the RV, I'm going to ask them, is there a certain time that we have to start our projects? I believe that they feel that many of us are not going to do anything until
the NDA.
The NDA. Thank you. God bless you. The NDA is complete.
I'm not going to wait for the NDA because I've been actually working on my project to get my pots to the world so we can feed the world for about 6 years now. I already have one of my molds already made. I need seven more. So I don't plan on stopping at all. I'm going to take probably 2 or 3 weeks to go get my toes on the beach, get my head straight. But even then, I'm pretty sure I'll be making notes to get going. I'm a type A personality, so it's going to be hard for me to not do it. I believe, though, that you will have time to go on a vacation. I believe that you will have time to figure out your personal issues. If you've got family members that are needing the med bed, I've been told by several different people that you will, in fact, this guy, that was one of the other things I forgot to tell you, is this guy had actually spoken and asked, hey, look, will I have access to a med bed because my wife is very sick? And he was told yes. So I did not remember, because I was all Twitter-pated, to ask when is she going to see the med bed. I didn't ask that question, but that's on my list of questions to ask. I hope that answers your question.
Yes, it does. Thank you.
You're welcome. Anybody else?
Yes, hello. I have a question. I hope it's not too basic for the room.
It's okay, but, John. Let's give it a shot.
Okay, thank you. It has to do with kind of the hierarchy of the redemption and the family governance plan and the global project. Now, am I right in saying that a person could go into this meeting and simply redeem their Zim and walk away?
I've been told that is absolutely possible. But I'm also being told, hang on just a minute.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I'm also being told that the rates that you get for just for doing that will be substantially less.
Okay.
And that includes the rates for your personal part of this. There's two parts of money to the Zim. There's the part that you're going to put in your RV project, and there's your personal part. So I have been told that they will, if they accept your project, that they will also fund your family governance. This is the reason why I talk about doing the family governance. Other groups that are doing family governance, what they do is they give you a document they want you to fill out. And the first thing that they have you ask for is your family governance project. And I'm going to tell you right now, that's not the right way to do it. You only have 6 to 8 minutes to do this presentation. If you start talking about your family governance, you're not giving them the shot or the chance to hear about your national or your global project. You want them to approve your global project. So the best advice I can give you, and I'm telling you this not because I've been to the RV, but I've literally been behind over 500 companies starting. I'm a startup expert. I get funding for companies and then I help them start their companies up. Once they're up and going, I go do the next one. I've done over 500 of these. And my information that I'm giving you does not come from anyone from the RV. It has to do with me doing this in real life and making some assumptions. And, you know, I could be 100% wrong, but my assumption is, because a humanitarian project is literally nearly identical to a business project, I believe that everything is going to be nearly the same for business and for humanitarian, because it follows the same logic. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that you're going to have time to have time out for your vacation. I believe that you're going to have different things that are going to take longer and shorter time. So say you're going to start a project. Here, I got one. I've got a guy who wants to do flying cars, and we don't know anything about flying cars. None of us do. So when he goes to RV, he's going to specifically ask, is there a solution to do flying cars? And that's the project I would like to do. Is there anything available that I could do my project in that? Depending on what they say, that's what's going to go. Did I answer your question?
Yes, but I have a follow-up on that. And is it correct to say that the family governance and the global project will be monies over and above your basic redemption. They'll be
exactly
separate.
And exactly above. Exactly. The money that the information I have is that they will fund your global and national project, as well as fund your personal humanitarian project. I'm going to spend, out of the six to eight minutes, I'm going to spend 7 minutes talking about my global project. And then I'm going to say, after I'm done, I'm going to say, I understand that this humanitarian gift also wants to make sure that my friends and my family are also taken care of. So I'd also like to submit this humanitarian project for your approval. And we're going to manufacture pots in 5 different locations. And that's going to be mm-hmm. my family governance. Is we're going to supply the pots for my global foundation. Okay. I'm not going to talk about it. I'm not going to talk about it at all. I'm going to talk all about my global project. And then as a side note, here's the documentation. If I understand, if you accept this, you will also fund this. So in that spirit, here's the family governance project.
Okay, so is the family governance project contingent upon having a global humanitarian project, or can you do one without the other?
I believe it is. I believe you can do a global humanitarian project and not have a family governance. I believe you cannot have a family governance without a global, because there's no reason for them to fund your family if you're not doing something to help the world.
Okay, that answers my question. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir. Good luck. Is there anybody else who have questions?
Yes, I do, Ms. Parker.
Hey, Rico.
Hi. I'm not sure if this was covered, but I'm hearing conflicting, from different sources about when will we get to present our projects. Would that be on the day of the exchange or a second meeting?
That is a really interesting question, because the information, were you in the beginning of the chat when I was reading the information I got from my guy?
I kind of joined a little late.
Okay. So what happened is I was able to ask this whale who has already RV'd, I was able to ask him a lot of questions. And one of the things I had done is I had sent him one of my projects, because he was going to do a medbed type thing. So I said, look, you can use this, just adapt it for your country. So he did, he turned it in. And then when he came back, he said that he was pulled. He was pulled and talked to by 6 different people. And part of the reason he believed that he was pulled to be talked to is because his project is focusing on one of the EOs, one of Trump's executive orders. So this is the reason why earlier in the channel here, I posted, where is it? This is what I posted here. Let me forward it to the channel again. Select, forward. So this is the reason why I posted these two documents earlier, is because he was sent that EO National Healing Center document. He took that and he adjusted it to make it fit his country and what he was doing. And he focused his EOs on one of Trump's EOs. Sabrina was in here earlier. Sabrina, are you still in here? Sabrina was in here earlier. She's apparently read through yes. all of these executive orders. Can you tell him what you found out about international on the EO, please?
A lot of the executive orders, when you read through them, it specifically says, you know, for instance, the virtual treat center, it says to promote missions and spiritual retreats or spiritual guidance internationally. You'll see the word internationally in there. So it does cover it.
Okay. And is it imperative to have Trump's EO numbers on our projects?
I don't know if I would use the word imperative. I do know that this gentleman who RV'd was not in the United States, and it was absolutely important to them that he had focused on one of the EOs, because he's doing one of those EOs in their country.
apparently this is more worldwide than we thought, and it's affecting the whole world. So these EOs, they can be done in your own country. He believes that he was pulled out and was talked to. They spent a lot more time with him because his project was based on one of the EOs, and he was going to apply it to his own country. So I don't know if I need some imperative, but for him, he was telling me, look, tell your people, it's really important. Oh, and the other thing he said is there's a lot of information that I had on there that was not important. They don't really give a shit about your background. The information that I stress all the time, you guys, is how many people are you going to hire? How much is it going to cost to run your project for 100 years? And how many people will it impact? What was the last one? How many years will it run? So those are the four pieces of information they really want. His document had all four of those pieces of information on it, just as I'm hoping all of yours does.
Yes. Okay. Third and last question. Okay. Is it possible to do this, the med beds, locally and internationally?
That's something you're going to have to ask them. I'm assuming yes, because they want you to do global. Oh, that's kind of cool. You want to do it just for your area and then go branch out worldwide? That's kind of an interesting thing. I don't think there's going to be a problem with it. One of the reasons why we're being pushed so hard to do global and local, or global and national, is because they believe a lot of the countries are not going to have people that have the currency money. So I don't think there'd be any problem with it all, because it global, or I don't think they have a thing that says you have to do national, then go global. I don't think that would be a problem at all. I think that'd be a great idea.
Awesome. Well, thank you. As always, thank you very much from the bottom of my heart.
You're welcome. Giant hugs. Please mute your mic. I can hear all your feedback of your dishes. Is there anybody else that has a question?
I just wanted to say something.
Let Sabrina speak.
In regards to
everybody who can. Thank you.
In regards to whether or not you want to include that on there or not, there was. There's always something. I'm retired military, and if you're good idea, very great. But you know what?
You're breaking it up, Sabrina. You're breaking up really bad.
Anything?
You're breaking up, Sabrina,
okay,
really
let
bad.
Me go out and here we go. Okay. Is that any better?
Oh, tons, yes, ma'am.
So I'm a retired military person, and we always joked about having good idea fairies. Everyone is a good idea fairy. But if you present a problem and you also present the solution, they are more apt to go along with what you projected because you've done the research on it. So whether or not you want to put the EO on there and do that little extra, which it's not hard, that's entirely up to you. But you know, if you present someone the solution, they're probably going to go with what you recommend.
You know what? That is really, 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 really true. Every single one of my clients that have gone in and gotten more money than they thought they were going to get, they all had a solution to the problem that they were trying to fight and solve. That's really absolutely important information. Thank you, Sabrina.
You're welcome.
I had a question for you.
Go ahead, Nicole.
I wondered, I understand that the humanitarian project is like a donation, like a nonprofit organization type of situation, and that you're hiring people to work in various areas. What I was wondering is, do you, as the manager of the humanitarian project, get paid also for working during the project, or your pay is only coming from your family governance?
It sounds to me like you kind of have a misunderstanding. A humanitarian project is a project that gives things away. It supplies a need, or it fills a solution to a problem. So it's not a business. It's not you go out and charge people for what you're doing. It's a service that you're going to provide, or a product that you're going to provide, or help in some way that you're going to provide. So that's the first issue. As
as someone who is operating the project or overseeing the project, you'll be able to receive compensation. But you're not going to go in there and say, you know, this is a company with 10 people and I'm a CEO, I get $1 million. That's not being a good steward of the money. You're not going to be able to take your foundation money or your humanitarian money and be completely ridiculous with it. There's two pots of money. Most people don't realize there's two complete pots of money with the ZIM. And up until very recently, the ZIM was the biggest kitty in the playground, okay? The two pots of money is your personal money, your personal funds, and the funds that are given to you by the Alliance to do your project. Now, this gets really, really important to people that have one bill. Say you come in there and you got a $500,000 bill, okay? That's not a lot of money. Your project is going to take $20 billion to do. So clearly that's not a big enough bill to fund your project. If your project is something that they think is needed and they think that you can do it and all, you know, you got all the right stuff, they will 100% fund your project, even if you don't have enough money to do it yourself. Because we are literally the tools that the United States is using to take back our country and rebuild our country and give people help. Because the people worldwide have been struggling, have been starving. So you've got to come into this with a mindset of, I'm here to help the people, okay? You can't be flagrant or stupid or ridiculous with the wages you pay yourself. The other part of the money is the part of the money that you keep for your own personal use. I've heard anywhere from 10% of the ZIMs, 11% of the ZIM, to 30% of the ZIM that you turn in is going to be put to your humanitarian project, depending if you not have enough to cover it or whatever the situation is. The other part of that money is your money, your personal money. Most of the people that I'm dealing with right now in my admin group, these are the people who I absolutely love. I mean, we're all going to be friends forever. Every single one of those members, none of us, not one of us, are planning on, here's what we're going to do with 10% of our ZIM money. None of us are doing that. All of us are doing the same thing. We're going to probably get 10 times more money than we can spend in our entire lifetime. I am doing 9 projects. And I'm not doing little projects. I have massive motherfucking projects that go worldwide. One of my projects is going to hire 90,000 people. So this is not, I'm going to change the world. I'm going to bring food to the world. I'm going to bring food storage to the world so people that grow their own food have a way to store it for year round and have access to food. There's going to be no more food scarcity. That's what I'm doing. But to do this, you have to be able to have the income to satisfy your needs for your family. Because here's what they don't want. If you've got a global project, say you're in Kathmandu. Okay, I'm going to go to Kathmandu and I'm going to bring food to Kathmandu. And I go to Kathmandu and my stupid brother breaks his leg. And it's a major break and they don't have enough money to cover the hospital bills. And I need you to be home right now. I'm in freaking Kathmandu. I can't do that. I got projects to do. They want you to be able to bless your family and have a full humanitarian family project that is going to make sure that your brother's taken care of. He's got insurance. You set up a family trust to take care of your family. If your project is accepted and it's going to be a standalone project that they are going to fund,
they will also fund your humanitarian, your family governance project. This is the reason why I spend so much time with the family governance. It's not for the people that have 100 trillion, 200 trillion, 500 trillion, 100 trillion. It's for the people that have 5 million. It's for the people that have 500,000. They truly do not have enough currency to pay for their project, let alone pay for their family governance. However, if what they are doing is going to change the world, and what they are doing is right and proper, and what they are doing, the Alliance feels is a need to our society, they are going to fund that project. Then there, if you have your humanitarian project, you say you do your presentation, you do your 6-7 minutes, and at 7-minute mark, you stop your shit. And you say, I understand that if my project is accepted as a standalone project by the Alliance, that you will also cover my family governance project. Here's my family governance project. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. And then give them those set of documents. Now, if they don't accept your family governance, they want to put your, because all the ZIM has to go, a portion of the ZIM, no matter what you do, has to go to, I think it's 11% is the minimum to go to federal funding to help rebuild America. So no matter what you do, that a certain percentage of that ZIM is going to go to them, even if they say no to your project. But you still get to keep all that other money, which is at least 80%. So you personally are not going to have a problem with drawing a wage out of your humanitarian project if you have that kind of income. If you only have a small bill, then yes, you know, you can be a little generous with yourself because you're still going to be funded. Your project will be funded, not your personal money. So having scarcity of money causes you to be very worried about paying your bills and getting money and getting paid, you know, for the job. We have been so brainwashed. We literally, every single one of us have been brainwashed. You get up, you go to school, you go to high school, you go to college, you get a job, you work 30 years, you get your retirement, and you get cancer and you fucking die. And that's your whole job. We have never been told you have the power to create your own world. You have the power to create what you love. You have the power to change the world. And because you've never been given this amazing gift, you still think in the old way. I have to have money. I have to buy a house. I have to buy a car. I have to get ready and pay for my funeral before I die. I'm urging all of you, step out of the matrix thinking. Your brain has been telling you, a lot of you, you can't do this. You didn't go to college. You don't know what you're doing. How on earth do you think that you can be, little old you, can start a project and then do a national project and then do a global project? You ain't shit. You've never done this. That's what's been beaten into your head. They did a good job of it. I'm here to tell you, to tell your head to shut the fuck up. Listen to your heart. You're not here by accident. You're here for a reason. You are here to carve a beautiful world and to do things that's going to make your heart sing, because you're going to be pursuing and helping the people that need what you have. If I have a friend of mine, and he is a realtor in Miami Beach, Florida.
And I love this guy. I just love this guy. He is a realtor. He's $10 million homes is where he starts at. He has his own property. He has several homes. He drives, I don't even know what the hell that car is. He drives some badass fucking car that I drool every time I hear the engine. I don't even know what it is, but I'm going to tell you right now, this redhead is going to have one of those because that engine sounds like love at first firing. But I asked him, I asked him at Christmas. I said, if you could do anything, any kind of humanitarian project. Now, he absolutely doesn't know anything about this. If you could have money to give away, or you could give away a thing, what would you give away? What would make you happy? And he looked at me, and he didn't miss a beat. Now, this guy is from Puerto Rico. And so he looked at me. He didn't miss a beat. He said, I would have 4 ice cream trucks, and I would drive to, I can't remember the area, he said, and I would give away ice cream to all the Puerto Rican kids that can't afford ice cream. There's a whole bunch of other kids that can't afford ice cream either. But the ice cream trucks come in, and all the rich kids get ice cream, and all the poor kids don't get shit. So I want to give away ice cream to the poor kids. And I was like, dude, wouldn't you want to, like, feed Puerto Rico? Wouldn't you want to, you know, wouldn't you want to do something in your home? Nope. They can take care of themselves. I want to take care of the kids in Miami. This is what I want to do. I have teased him. I thought this was the funniest thing ever. And it took me a minute. I teased him a couple times. And then all of a sudden it hit me. What kind of bitch are you? What kind of fucking asshole, shitty fucking friend are you? This guy told you his real dream. And you laughed at it. How would you feel if you tell people, I invented a pot that's going to change the way growing is done, and I'm going to feed the world, and they laughed at you? How would you fucking feel? Oh, I wouldn't like it. I'm pretty sure he doesn't like it either. So one of my projects, this is my project, folks. I'm going to put it in the thing. He is going to die. He is going to absolutely cry because this is for him. It's called the Nice Ice Cream Project. And I'm going to set him up with his own little trust fund. And he's going to give ice cream to the inner city kids in Miami. That's what he's going to do. He makes massive money. But this is about getting your heart to sing. The money's going to be there. Don't worry about the money. You want something. You want to make something. You want to develop a plan. You want to develop a project that is so good to you that when you wake up in the morning, you can't wait to get to whatever your event is. I can see Eduardo. I can see him. He would literally be up at 7 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, loading his little ice cream trucks. I already know he would do this because of the joy that you can hear in his voice when he talks about this. It's the same joy I have. I'm telling you, folks, you need to pick joy. Think about what would make you really happy to do. And that is your project. That's your project. Whatever that thing is, that's why you're here. It's in your heart. If you can't hear it or you don't know what it is, spend some time with God. Pray. I don't think I ever dreamed I would be telling anybody to pray. I really did not have a good relationship with God for many years. I do now. Thank God. Thank you, God. Really, thank you, God. God, you really fucking rock. Thanks. But if you don't know what's in your heart, you got to find it. Look inside because it's there. Something you have in you. You're not here. You're not here by accident. You have something that you need to give to the world. You may not know what it is yet, but whatever that thing is, it's the thing inside you that makes you go, oh God, I get down to the office today. I got to see what's going on. This is going to be a great day. When your, quote, work becomes passion, it's no longer work. And that
inner spirit, that inner fire, that inner joy, you're going to pass that, whether or not you know it. But you're going to pass that passion to the other people that are around you. You're going to find headhunters. This is going to go right into the project. The first topic was about getting staff. You're going to pass that passion to the people that work with you. And your whole team will be end up the same way. Because you light a fire from joy. Joy lights fires in hearts. When you're doing something that brings you real joy, everybody around you is lit up. Because they all want to have that same joy. So you have to hire staff, especially staff in your house, that fully are behind what you're doing. Because they're going to feel your passion, and your passion is going to bounce off of them and feed you some more. So you've got to pick a project, literally, that you cannot wait to start. That you want it, like I'm thinking, I'm going to go out and spend, like I'm going to go take a vacation for 4 weeks. And my heart of hearts is saying, ha, 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 I bet you don't last two. Because you won't be able to handle not starting what you've been dreaming of. That's the type of project you need to pick for yourself, folks. To the lady that asked me about getting money, I hope I answered your question. You will be able to draw a salary, but salary is not important. How about your heart?
Yes, thank you. I wasn't thinking that I was going to like make $1 million off of it. I just wondered. But I think you answered it more about getting paid through the governance, which kind of helps me understand.
I can barely understand you. You're not, you don't have very good, it's kind of gobbled up. Can you get in a better place to talk? Nicole, I can barely hear you, hon.
Can you hear me better?
You sound like you're in a, can you get the mic closer to your mouth? Well, I think she might have fallen off.
Sorry about that. I'm right by the microphone, but I don't know if you can hear me okay. But okay. Thank you so much. That really helped answer. I didn't think you'd make a whole bunch of money off the humanitarian project, but I understand better now that you really get your money from the governance. And then I wondered about being able to pay other people to work on the project. But that was really helpful information. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Hi, I have a question.
Hey, Kat, what do you need?
Well, I just came on, and I do hold them, and you kind of answered the question. I don't know if I have nearly enough to fund what I want to do. I have two parts of the question. That's the first question. But I think you explained it in the last call, that if the project is accepted, then they will give you enough money. Is that what you were saying?
Yes, that is what I was saying. And this recording, this is also recorded. It seems like you might have missed a little bit more than what you think. If you just go back to the recording. Is there anyone else?
Hi.
Hey, Scott.
Hi. Quick question, too, is I have many projects as well. I have a healing center with med beds, a veterans rehab center that'll tie with the healing. But I also want to give back to God's money, his tithe. Would that be classified as a project as well? Or would that just be through my money?
Well, that's a great question. And your philanthropy money is
philanthropy. It's not charity. So if you give money with no strings, such as a tithe, that's considered charity. What you can do that is kind of what I do is I take 10% of my money and I give it to people that are in grocery stores waiting to get groceries. I give it to people that I personally see are struggling. I don't really trust a church. If you want to give to a church and it's a church you trust and you think they're doing the right thing and the preachers are not out there raping and killing kids like the Catholic Church is, then do things in lieu of. The church needs a new floor, so you tithe a new floor. The church needs a new ceiling, new roof. You tithe the ceiling. Figure out what the 10% is. Yeah, don't give them the money. Be responsible for the money and oversee the money, because your job as a humanitarian is you have to have oversight of that fund, because the last thing they want you to do is give it to the bad guys with you not knowing it. That's why you have to be responsible for everything you give away. You have to oversee it. Hope that helps. I don't know why your thing was shut off, Scott. There you go. I hope that explains. I hope that helps.
Okay. Yeah. So what I was going to do is put it into a trust, and they want to expand their youth program to draw the youth, you know, get their more involvement and put God in front of them. So that's what I was going to do is put a trust for the expansion of their program for teens.
That's not a bad solution, Scott. But what you need to do is you need to be on that board.
Okay.
You need to be on that board. Bring it to the elders of the church. Let them discuss what they want to do. Have a committee of 10 people, 12 people, an even number. Because what you're there for is you're the tiebreaker. So you want it to be the church decides how they spend the money, your trust money. And it means a majority of the people have to agree. It can't be half and half. If it's half and half and you want to go further with the project, then you decide yes or no. It's in your hands because you're the chairman of that board.
The preacher, so that might be wise to form a foundation. That way I have control of that with the board.
Absolutely. That's exactly what they would want you to do. They want oversight of the money.
Okay, very good.
Good deal. That's a nice project. Congratulations. Anybody else have questions? We all done with questions? Okay. So we kind of did this more like a chat than actual talk. The first topic we were doing tonight was staffing suggestions. I went over this a little bit ago, and there was some people asking me a lot more questions about it. So I pulled this list up, and I am going to publish this list. I figured out what people are wanting, and so what I did, save this as browse, and this is going to go in the desktop, redemption, and transition staff journey. So here is the document, redemption, and transition staff journey. Let's open this, make sure it's the right document. Yep, that's the right one. So here is the transition staff. There you go. Now you guys have it. This will make it super easy for you to go through and figure out who you want to hire and what positions you want to hire for. As we are, I believe we are very, very, very close to this. You need to look at this list and start figuring out what kind of things you're going to need personally and what type of people you're going to need to hire. Now, the reason why I suggest you do this now is it ties back to your 10-day, 30-day, 90-day plan. I have this up here, the 10-day, 90-day, 30-day plan. Here's the sample of it. Let me just post that in here. One of the things I did get information from another person who is part of the team that looks at these projects, is that it was really, really, really important to have a 10, a 30, and a 90-day plan attached with your document. So you'll be turning in 2 pages maximum of your document, and then a third page that has your 10, your 30, and your 90-day plan. Now, this is not required. This is not, first of all, I want you to know this is not a required document, but there is a major perk to having it there. When we talked to the guy, when I talked to that guy that's in the other country yesterday, and then I talked to another guy who I know that's in Switzerland, and both of these guys said the exact same thing. When they had people looking at this document, what was the most important thing was, how were they planning on getting it started? What were they planning on doing? So in these plans, one of the guys, his 30-day, 90-day plan was he was going to do nothing for the first 20 days. And then he outlined how he was going to start with his management team and then hiring different people. He had a full schedule of things after that 20 days, which made his first 30 days. And then he had stuff for 90 days. And some of them were, you know, this week I'll do these things. Instead of doing it day by day by day, it was like in a week. It took him a lot of time to do it. But what it does is it shows the people that are looking at these projects, when they go to evaluate these projects, it shows them that you have, that's what a CEO does. That's what a project manager does, is they figure out and break down the work into chunks. If they see, when they see that, that lets them know, hey, you're not just Joe Schmo saying, well, I got money and I want to run a project. I got money, I got plans, and I got a way to do it. That's a big difference from I got money, I want to run a project. I know some of you right now are screaming, I got money, I want to run a project, and I can do that, but I don't know how to run a project. That's okay too. The solution for that is easy. When you turn in your project, say you're a housewife. You raised 2 kids and you've never had a job outside the house. You don't know what the hell you're doing. But you have a dream and you have a goal. And you want to build city parks in all the little, there's 15,230 towns under 10,000 people in the United States, and you want to rebuild or upgrade the city parks in all those parks. You don't know shit about city planning. You don't know about construction. You don't know about hiring anybody. You don't know any of the nuts and bolts of this, okay? And they know you know. They know you don't know because they see Betsy here has been raising 3 kids and she don't know shit. How do you get over that when you're in an interview? What you do is you say this. While I don't have the skills to CEO an organization of this size, what I do have is the passion to do it. So my plans are to hire an interim CEO to teach me how to run this organization. And this person will stay with me for about 5 years. And at that point, I will either go to another city and begin this project again, or he will go and I will stay and we'll hire another person and train them to be the CEO for the next phase in of our operation. I'm going to scaffold my knowledge with a CEO that I hire that's a professional in this industry. When you use terms like that,
That's a way of saying without saying, I know what I'm going to do. I know what I want to do. And I know that I don't know how to do it. So this is my solution. They're going to look at you much more strongly on your projects if you start talking like that. Because that's the sign of a person that's a motivator, self-starter. That's the great kind of a person to have to be spearheading one of these foundations, is that you know you don't know and you already have a solution. That action for a solution, that'll get you far. Once you get the money and you get going and you've got a CEO, you can sit back, kind of, and you can let all these people help you. Now, that doesn't mean give up your power and make let them make all the decisions. That means have them teach you how to do your job, if that's something you want to do. If building city parks is like, this is the best thing since sliced bread, I get to build city parks. If that's what it makes you feel, then you're going to be a sponge getting as much information from that CEO. You'll be like drinking from the well, trying to get as much information from him. And you will be ready to stand on your own 2 feet in 5 years. All this shit that they teach you in college is bullshit. All the stuff that they tell you, oh, you got to go to this class. I became a school teacher because I thought, oh, I'm just a dumbass marijuana grower. I never graduated college. I didn't even graduate high school. So I went to school at 42 years old to get my high school diploma and to get my college degree and to get my teaching degree. I went through all that stupid shit to realize I was way fucking smarter before I went to college. They just feed you shit that's not true. None of it works in the real life. So if you don't have a college degree, do not tell yourself you're not good enough. Because I swear to God, the school of hard knocks called life has got you set up way better than a college degree. Never forget that. So when you're going in there, don't be intimidated. If you want to do this and you don't have a degree, you just say, hey, look, I'm going to scaffold my education on running this business by hiring a CEO who's a specialist in this industry. I expect that CEO to train me for 5 years. And at that point, we'll determine if we're going to open a second facility or he's going to run it. And or we'll determine, make hiring determinations at that point. You're set. That's all you have to say. Anybody have any questions about that? So one of the things that you are also going to need to do that they're going to ask you about, and now when I say they, I'm talking about the staff, that you're going to have a management staff. Now, I do not know what they're going to ask you, okay? But because of the people that they're telling you, or the list of people we're getting that you're going to have, like a gardener, chef, blah, blah, blah. I've hired all those people. I've hired all those people for myself. I've hired all those people for other people. And there are things you should do right now while you have the time, because it's going to make a major positive difference in your life later. Take this list, this transition staff list, okay? First thing you want to do with it is you want to go through this list and you want to figure out what people you're going to actually need. Okay. Now, some of these people, if you're going to have a family governance and you're going to have a family governance office, that means a company that works with you to set up your family governance. Many of these people on this transition staff, you're not going to need, because it should be part of your family governance. And you can use the information. Oh, let me talk about family governance for a minute. Family governance, those offices that help you put together your family governance, they offer you free education classes on family governance. Take those classes. They are amazing. And it'll help you be better at what you're doing. Okay. So in a good family governance, what you're going to ask them for is you're going to ask them, you're going to ask them if they have an accounting team. They should have an accounting team. That means you're not going to need an accounting team.
They are probably going to have an art advisory and collections management, so you won't need to hire that. These are the questions when you go to talk to a family, you're going to interview a family governance organization to set up your family office. You're going to ask them, do you have an accounting and tax service? They say, yeah. Then you check that off this list of people. Every part that they say they have yes to, that means it's one part you don't have to do. So art advisory is usually family governance does that. Asset management, family governance does that. Aviation safety training, they do not. Brand identity, web design, they do not. Charity and philanthropy, oh, you betcha. The family governance is going to have people that are going to help you take care of that. Compliance and oversight, that's if you are doing a business or a service that has rules and regulations. Say, for instance, you want to train hairdressers, people that cut hair, and you want to put them in outlying areas where there's nobody that cuts hair. That has a compliance issue because there's laws to be a, there's licenses to have a hairdressing license. So that's what compliance and oversight means. It would be any kind of trained job, and they're not going to do that for you. A concierge, they absolutely will. Consultancy, family governance. Digital gold, no, you're going to have to find a company that does digital gold for you. I don't know anything about digital gold. Digital privacy and cybersecurity, no, they're not going to do that. They will help you with cybersecurity, though, but that's going to be mostly for your security team. I wouldn't trust anybody, any organization, except my own security team to do my cyber as well. Education consultancy and private tuition, they're not going to do that. Employee screening, they're not going to do that. Events and lifestyle management consultancy, oh, absolutely. That's usually a service that they offer. Family office solutions, yep, they'll offer that. Family video biographies, yep, they'll offer that. Genealogy and family history, yep, they'll offer that. Governance specialists, that's family governance specialists. You bet they'll have classes on that. Home entertaining and party service, they will not cover that. HR, human resources, they will not cover that. Independent wealth management services, yeah, they'll have classes for that. Insurance, they will teach you all kinds of stuff about insurance and stuff you don't even know. Your insurance policy is actually your bank. I don't even have the time to explain that one, but they will. Interior design and consultancy, nope. International foreign exchange, you bet they will. They'll help you with that. Legal, they'll probably offer you some legal services. And they'll give you references so that you won't have to worry about. Medical and health, they'll absolutely do that. Mobile and telecom, yeah, they're going to want you to be ultra secure with your phones or your telecom. Multidimensional governance, yep, that's what they do. Multifamily office, yep, that's what they do. PR and communications, no. Private aircraft management and charter, no. Maybe, actually, that's a maybe because that's usually done through your concierge. Private family office, yep, that's what they do. Property advisory, a lot of family home offices, they have property advisory. They do not have hotel advisory. They do not offer property search in commercial, residential, international. What they do is they tell you if the property you're looking at fits your goals. Security and protective services, no. Succession and estate planning, yes, they do that. They will offer technology advisors, but I go outside my family governance to do that. They will offer you training. They'll offer you trust and fiduciary services. They often offer venture capitalist investments that they've already vetted before they bring to you. And they do offer you ways to do VIP travel. So once you figure out what things that your family governance doesn't do for you, then you have to look at this list and figure out what you have to do for yourself. When you're looking at this list, like for administrative assistant, think of what you want this person to do for you, and start looking at these things. Like, even if you don't know what they do, I would like an administrative assistant to go pick up my dry cleaning, go take my dog for a walk, go set up whatever it is.
I want my administrative assistant to have stenographer skills so that she can file and write all the documents I need sent out every day. I need my administrative assistant to, whatever it is that you need your administrative assistant, you think you need them to do for the, your project. So start writing that down. Ivala, please close your mic. Ivala, please close your mic. Thank you. Aviation safety training. I never did that. But I don't fly. I don't like to fly at all. I like to take trains or cars or boats. So that's not something I'm familiar with. Because most humanitarian projects, you're going to have to promote your project to let people even know what you're doing. You're going to have a brand identity, web design, and marketing team. And so think about how you want your project to be told to the world. Imagine it is here, and how would you get that information out? What kind of company do you need to service whatever types of advertising things you're going to do for this new project? So jot down some notes for this. All of these things that I'm telling you to jot down, you're going to give this information when you go to your second meeting, when you meet with your management team. Apparently, many of us have been told that they're going to have a transition team to help you transition from wealth there into a tier one bank or into your own family governance or into a group of people that they help you vet and go through because they know you've not, never done this before. So they're going to ask you what you need. And if you give them as much information as possible, it will help them pick the right people for you faster and get you going faster. Otherwise, they're gonna take lists like this and they're gonna say, hey, who do you think you wanna hire? How do you have this vision? They're gonna hit you with so many questions about how do you want this? What do you think? And blah, 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 blah. So if you take the time now to kind of flesh this out in your mind and have a good think about it so that you've already thought about these different options, that's going to be so much handier when you're in your first meetings, because this is getting you way above what they're expecting from you. I always try to get my clients to get more information before the next step so that they look like they're, even if they have no experience whatsoever, I want my clients to walk in there and look like they could, here's, you guys are the baseball and we're the motherfucking bat. We're going to swing and we're going to hit. We're going to strike out. We're going to run the bases. I don't play baseball. Can you tell? But I do know about baseball bats. I'm going to tell you that. And I like to smack stuff with baseball bats. And so if you have this information, you're literally boosting what you're doing quicker and faster, and it's helping you get the right people underneath you. So you don't have to worry about, you don't have to have a think about this and try to figure it out when everybody else, you're going to be pulled all the different directions from all these different meetings when you first get this done. So if you have a good think about what you think you want, it just makes you way, way more ahead of the curve when you go for your second meeting. What's not on this list, this is just a transition step. What's not on this list is a personal assistant. And I don't know why I missed that. I just realized there's not personal assistant on there. But for me, a personal assistant is, that's a personal assistant and a head of security and a security team. Those are the first two people I want to hire. This is just for transition staff, for your funds and for all the stuff that makes your project, okay? But in a more personal point is your chef, your gardener, your personal assistant, and your security. The first call when I walk out
I don't know if I'll be walking out. I think I'm going to be floating out of there. When I leave the RV, is I'm calling my security. I'm calling the company that I want to hire, and I'm going to send them the 10K retainer, and I will have a security team hired, and they have assured me that they can get somebody on site within 48 hours. That's my first call. Second call is to call a headhunting agency that I know very, very well. I know the owner very well. She knows me very well, and I need to hire a personal assistant. Even if you don't hire security, get a personal assistant, because the information that you are going to be getting in that first 30 days is going to be very overwhelming. It's going to be a ton. Unfortunately, a lot of the people that you're going to be getting this information from, to them, this is like you're the 20th person they've talked to today about this stuff. And for you, it's your first time. So grasping massive amounts of knowledge in a really short time is difficult. If you get a PA, a personal assistant, who's been a personal assistant before and is an experienced personal, you want to get somebody that's like 40 years old and that's been doing it for 20 years. You want to get somebody that's highly experienced in being a personal assistant. The reason is nothing that's going to happen at those meetings are going to throw that person off. They've been there, done that. Nothing that is going to be said is going to be out of their realm of knowledge, because they've been working with the rich people already. Their last job, they was with a rich person. So they're going to be in tune to the gobbledygook of conversation that when you're first newly rich, you don't understand half the shit they're saying. No education, high school dropout, and my lawyer and my PA are having a conversation, and I'm trying to figure out what the fuck are they saying. And what are they talking about? They're talking about two words, and I don't know what each word means. One of those words is net, and the other one is gross. I did not know the difference between the words net and gross. I didn't even know there was a difference, nor did I know those words existed. But my PA and my lawyer, they were talking like, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. She knew that I had no fucking clue. I just know you do it, you grow it for this amount of money, you sell it for this amount of money, and there has to be profit in the middle. I didn't know there's actually two different terms for those things. And that's the degree of stupid I was when I first started running businesses. I didn't know those things. That's why having a PA for me was just like, thank you, Jesus, because she understood everything. And when the people left, she's like, all right, Miss Parker, sit down. I need to explain this to you because I know you don't know. And so she would just like break it down nice and slow and easy. So I got to understand. The information came at me in a way I could understand it. It was slower. And when I didn't know stuff, I could say, hey, look, I don't know what the hell you just said. And that way you're not being embarrassed by having to admit to a whole freaking room full of people that you don't know what the hell they said. That's why a personal assistant is really important. One of my friends, he says, I don't ever want to have a chef. I love to cook. And being a chef is the joy of my life. I love to cook. One of the things that's going to happen to you is you're not going to, some people, well, not everybody, some people, they do not want to give up their life at all, okay? They like to cook. They like their weekend brunches. They like their weekend barbecues. Everything's all good, okay? The problem is that as this goes further and further along, your time is going to be way more valuable than you ever dreamed it would be. You won't be able to spend the time to cook, because there's going to be 20 different other things that need your attention. So you're going to have time off when you have time off, but when you have on time, there it's like a hurricane of information. You won't have time to step away and cook for two or three, you know, cook for an hour or two. You'll eventually, what'll happen is you'll start making meetings at lunches, at restaurants. And then you'll get sick and tired of going to restaurants every single meal. And you'll start craving home cooked food, but you don't have time. that's when you'll end up hiring a chef. You can either rock with it or roll with it. I could not. The first time I got wealthy, I was like, I'm never going to have a chef. I don't want to do any of this shit. And 8 months later, I'm interviewing a chef because I can't handle it. There's not enough time to raise two kids, run this massive company, and do all the 900 other things. So having a chef made sense. And after that first time, like, I've gone up and I've lost it all. Fucking feds take all my money. I've lost it. And then the first person I hire is my security. The second person I hire is my chef. And it feels kind of weird at first to have somebody in your kitchen cooking. But after a while, it's just normal. It's just normal. So think about what you want in a chef. You're going to have people come to you that are so highly skilled in how they cook. You won't like nothing they make. I want comfort food. I want cornbread and gravy. So think about the kind of food you like to eat. Think about what's your favorite kind of food. And when you interview a chef, the way you interview a chef is you have all the shit there to make whatever food you want to make, and you have them make it for you. If you can't make it for you, don't hire them, because you'll hate it every single meal after that. Your gardener. Your gardener is different, because your gardener is going to take care. Like, if you live in a low maintenance, like, all you have to do is mow the lawns, do a little trimming, that's simple. You can hire a normal gardener. But when you get into high wealth homes, multi-million dollar houses, you have to have a gardener that understands the different in plants, what the different plants are, how each of them grow, what kind of nutrients they need. What a lot of gardeners these days are not trained in formal gardens. They don't even know how to prune them or shape them. None of that. That's a high-end person. So when you're talking to a potential gardener to hire, you want to make sure that that gardener also works for other high-end people, because then he's going to have the same level of skills for plants. Ask for pictures of the current work he's doing. Does anybody have any questions about hiring people?
I do, about a personal assistant.
Yep.
It seems like the timing would be critical of when you would hire that person, because if she's there for those initial meetings of information overload, it seems like she might be, and I say she, it could be a he, it seems like they might be privy to information that might conflict with the NDA. Am I crazy?
You think that? No, you're not crazy. Just go back on me. John?
I don't know who's...
John?
Yeah.
Please.
Oh,
thank you.
Perfect.
The reason why I say to write down the notes of what you want is because many of you will never have hired a personal assistant before. You're going to go to a headhunter. Interview headhunters right now. Talk to headhunters and say, hey, have you placed personal assistants? Have you had any help with this? Blah, blah, blah. Figure out what headhunter you want to use. And then write down all the tasks of what you want your PA to do. Here, I'm going to show you something else. This is another document that you guys are going to need. Okay, here we go. File, save as, browse. Okay, desktop. And this is, what's the name of this file? Job title. There we go.
This is a real document, folks. This is right out of my workbook, my hiring book. What you're going to end up doing is you're going to end up doing this kind of a thing for your, you're going to write up this kind of a document. You guys are more than welcome to use this, this template and then fill it out for whatever you want. There, when you hire somebody, when you go to a hiring agency, they're going to ask, what do you need this person to do? Okay. They want a list. So if you already have a document set up of what you want for that person, all you have to do is give them this and they'll have somebody for you to interview within a couple days. You might, you know, the first couple of days meetings, they're going to be really intense. You can tell them to slow down and they will. But you want to get a PA as soon as possible. So, look at headhunters, look for headhunters that specialize in finding, personal assistants, and then have a document like this, figure out what you want now so that you can have this ready to give to a headhunter. And then they'll give it to the person and they'll help you find a personal assistant. And usually it doesn't take that long, especially if you've already done the preliminary work of putting this information into the hands of a potential headhunter.
My concern was more in those early days talking with the management team. Are they going to be hearing number information that they shouldn't be hearing that would get me in trouble with my NDA?
No, they're used to having high-end clients with personal assistants, and your personal assistant is going to have to sign an NDA. And because that's her job, she will probably be bonded. And if she's not bonded, you ask for her to be bonded, because what that means is you can sue her if she violates her NDA and you will win. The bond company will pay.
Gotcha.
So, have her sign an NDA. It's not uncommon. All my PAs, all my executive assistants, I mean, they're like, yeah, I got the job. And they're like, where's the pencil? Because they know the first thing, or where's the pen? They know the first thing I'm going to ask is, you need to sign an NDA. Because nothing that goes here leaves here.
Got it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
May I ask a follow-up question on the NDAs?
You bet.
I have heard from other channels that we need to list the names of the people on our NDAs when we go in. Well, how does that work? I guess, what's your thought on that? And then secondly, how are we able to, or I guess, will we be able to add like our risk management team, our personal assistant, our attorneys, or will we be able to add them to the NDA after? Or are you talking about we'll speak to these guys 30 days out?
So we have many, 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 many files, audio files. And these audio files give you a lot of detailed information. And this exact information that you're asking for is in the audio files. What I have, this is a sanitized NDA, and if you listen to the audio file, you'll be able to understand how to use this. This is the document you use. So let me get it downloaded into my desktop, into my RV. Okay. Put that in a list. And addendum sanitized. So what this does is a lot of people write NDAs, and the NDAs do not cover everybody. And how do you cover people if you don't know their names? So the way you cover them is by their job title. So this is a sanitized NDA, and you put in your spouse's phone number. You put in your executive assistant's phone number. If you don't have one, write TB determined, TBD. And then you have your security consultant. And you want somebody that's, either security, as in physical security, and IT and web security. So you're going to have two different types of security consultants. You can't hide anything from your web and security consultant because they see everything. They are very, 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 very comfortable with signing NDAs, all three of those people. Well, I don't know about your spouse, but the other two are, because that's just common business. So the way you solve the fact that you don't know the names of any of these people is you put them under professional contacts. Any and all retained and paid wealth managers, any and all retained or paid private bankers, any and all retained or paid personal bankers, any and all retained or paid attorneys, any and all retained or paid accountants or CPAs, any and all retained or paid transition team members, any and all retained or paid humanitarian and investment advisors, any and all retained or paid security consultants. There's one contact in there, and it's not usually in a sanitized NDA. And that one is any and all retained or paid humanitarian and investment advisors. There are a lot of people that have reached out to me and asked me if I'd be willing to mentor them or help them throughout this project. I cannot do it unless I'm a paid advisor, because I am not going to be responsible for your secrets unless I'm retained. This covers me, so I don't get in trouble with my NDA, and it covers you as well. All the rest of them are people that your transition team is going to help you find, and you don't know the names of those people yet. It may be the case that you have an attorney currently, and you find out, you go through the classes, you go through the little education they're going to teach you about attorneys, and 9 out of 10 of you, your attorneys that you have right now, they're not going to make it. They're not what you need. So you don't know the names of who you might hire. So that's the document you're looking for. I urge you to listen to the audios. There's way more information than what I'm giving you.
Thank you. That's awesome, though. Thanks.
Thanks. Anybody else have a question? Is anybody dying to ask a question? They're afraid to ask it. I can feel like somebody wants to ask something else. So I'm just like, God damn it, I don't want to ask her nothing. She's being bitchy. I'm a redhead. I'm always bitchy. So that was staffing suggestions. The second topic I was going to do is the family governance refresher. And that one is, that part of this topic is just a question and answer, because there's been tons and tons and tons of people sending me DMs about family governance. So if you have a question about family governance, please ask it now. If you have a question you think you know the answer, but you think might be an important one for people to get, please ask it, because this is taped, and hopefully your question and my answer will help other people.
Okay, I have a question.
All right, Jonesy, let's hear it.
So I put things in my family governance that I'm not sure belong there anymore. I have,
okay, like what?
Well, I want to build a water park in my town.
Yeah.
We have nothing to do here. And we have swim teams all over. I mean, mm-hmm. So I want to build a swim park. Water park. And I put that in family governance because it's community. But I don't know if that needs to come out of family governance and make that just
actually perfect. Because what your family governance about is not a project. It's what your family is passionate about.
Okay.
As a family. So I already know the answer to this one, because you say you have nothing to do there. So that I already know that everybody in your family, they're freaking dying to do something there.
Yes.
So your whole family would be passionate about helping small town communities have water parks or other facilities, right?
Yeah.
So what this means is you write up the Jonesy Family Water Park Foundation. And that is what your family governance does, is you take care of water parks. And you have an application process that you send out to towns to see if they want to have a water park. Everything you do in your family governance is focused on that water park. Now, how does this relate to your family? So you have a family member that says, hey, you know what? That water park thing is pretty cool. I want to do catering. So I want to set up little catering businesses inside the family water park, and we're going to donate X amount of money to the from the catering project to pay for something that goes to your family park. Now your family member has a small business, which is all humanitarian based, because profits are going to go back into the water park to pay for the power bill, pay for any kind of thing. All of your family now has an issue that they are going to figure out they need to do on the family park. You got another uncle. Your uncle's in your family governance, and your uncle's a concrete worker. So what he does is he has his own concrete business. He works out in the village, and you have a water park that needs concrete work done. So your family governance company hires uncle to do the concrete work. Now, his skill in the outside world is part of the family governance and what he does for the family governance. What does that get him? Family governance pays for your house, pays for your cars, pays for your insurance. It literally pays all your bills. All you have to do is have one part of what you're doing in the outside world work for your family governance. And that's how the family governance gets, that's what you guys all support. And the family governance, so you want to be a concrete worker, okay? And you have to go to a trade school to be a concrete worker. You apply to the family governance, say, hey, I need money to go take a training classes to be a concrete worker. Family governance says, you betcha, they write the check out. Because the family governance is going to have that uncle help the family in whatever they're doing. That uncle can only give up 20% of his time to donate time back to family governance. This is how you build wealth within your family for years and years and years and years. The family governance supports a project in the city, or a national project, or a international project, and every one of the family members donates a certain part of their time or their current business to help the family governance further itself. Does that make sense?
Yes, but I don't have very much family.
Well, if you listen to the family governance audio, which was made for people that don't know anything about this, you will hear that you don't have to have family.
Okay.
I only have two people that are alive that I'm related to, that I will even speak to. My adopted family, I don't consider them a part of my family.
Mm-hmm.
So I only have two people that are blood relatives, and I'm planning to do a family governance that's freaking massive, okay? One of those people has very young children. So that generation of children will be the ones that continue this family governance. So when you listen to the family governance audio, what it does is it says, set up your family governance for people that you know will be in your life for 5 to 6 years, and set them up so they can break away from your family governance after they've had the education and training of how to do a family governance, so they can break away and start one for their own family. By doing that, you don't have to have a big family. You follow the family governance where the different, you really need to listen to that, because I will be here for an hour explaining this to you. And if you just listen to it, it explains how you set your family governance up when you don't have family, It explains how they go in and out of your family governance, and it explains how you build wealth even if you have a tiny, tiny family.
Great, great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Anybody else have any questions? That NDA agreement is one of the best I've ever seen. This was done by one of the channel members and given to us as a gift. That is not my work. But I've signed a lot of different NDAs. These are called sanitized NDAs. I've never seen one this good. Do you have a question, Scott?
Yeah. With most banks, you only can keep $250,000 to be insured into certain banks. And of course, with us, we're going to have a multitude of money. I'm going to do the trust for my projects. But do you suggest where else to put the money so that it's liquefied to, as you're doing these projects for the contractor? The interior.
Problem, Scott. Here's the reason why. We're not going to have fiat banks anymore. So I believe that the blockchain itself has a built-in insurance. I don't understand blockchain. Everything's going to be on the QFS system. So everything we've done with fiat is going to change. What those changes are, I don't know yet. I know there's a lot of quantum financial system information coming out right now. But between you, me, and the wall, I'm really busy helping with people with their projects, so I haven't had a chance to really look into it much.
So we'll play by ear as we roll.
That's pretty much how I'm going to do it. I'm going to ask about currency insurance because I know about the $250,000 rule, but I don't think it's going to be an issue, especially when you listen to some of these YouTube channels where they talk about how the QFS is supposed to work. It sounds like it's nearly a bulletproof program. And if there's somebody on here online that knows the QFS, please speak up now.
Right, especially if everything's going digital.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Is there anybody on here that knows about the QFS? Oh, I feel so much better.
Of course, yes. What about it?
Oh, Brian, of course. Can you, Brian, his question was, is our money safe or are we going to have a $250,000 insurance coverage?
So, being that the standard system will be going away, this is my non-legal input. Leverage your position based on your risk tolerance. The world's about to change more than anyone would ever imagine. And the thing is that you probably won't have the FDIC. Interestingly enough, that question was this week. Today's actually not this week. Last week, late last week, the FDIC did come out and say they will not insure cryptocurrency, which is independent of QFS, but it's integral to the QFS. ISO 2022 is all integral. The point is that you want to secure as much as you want to based on the different aspects of the quantum financial system, the Sarah Jacera, and all of that, all inclusive. But it won't impact the QFS, if that makes any sense. I know I said a lot there, but
you have to be insured, though.
No, you shouldn't have to be insured. The whole part about the QFS, it will be tied to the blockchain. And that is very secure in itself.
Beautiful.
Yeah, there's your answer. It is unhackable and fully traceable. Which is
correct.
It's getting us out of the fiat system, which
correct.
That's how they hid money and did nefarious things within the bank. So that will not be possible.
So there's no need for insurance. That's the tall or the short of it. Yes, correct.
That's what I was thinking, but I wasn't sure. I knew we had some brainiacs on here. Is there any other question? So
Parker?
Yeah, go ahead, Kay.
I don't have a question, but I was wondering if you could turn your mic up a little bit. Is there a way to get more volume from your voice?
It's at full volume, my friend.
Okay. I'll put you on my big speaker then. Thank you.
Sorry about that. I'm usually not told that I'm too quiet. That's pretty funny. Sorry about that. The last topic that I have on here is the impact on wealth on pets and children. And I have this on here for a reason. I had a conversation today with a really, really nice lady. And she is at the point where she's pretty much terrified. And what she's afraid of is she's afraid of how wealth is going to change her life. And so we talked about it a little bit, and it's hard to imagine. It's really hard to imagine what it's like to go from living by yourself in your house with your, you know, your normal life now, and then all of a sudden having security around. And security, you know, it takes a while for them to figure out your way of life. And because it takes a while, they don't blend in right off the bat. So it can feel uncomfortable. It can feel like somebody's taking your space all the time. And until that stops, that feeling stops, it can be really uncomfortable. I've had some of my clients literally destroy their business because they couldn't handle all the traps that come with extreme wealth. I had one lady who was terrified about her kids. She was worried just constantly that her kids were soft target. And no matter how much security she hired, she couldn't get that out of her mind, and she could never be comfortable with it. It really bothered her that she had to consider that her child was a soft target. So this lady today was having that same problem. And she says, you know, how do you go from living your life normally to always looking over your shoulder? You don't. There's no going through it. You either do it or you don't. You won't be able to, if you don't live as a ghost, you won't be able to go to a restaurant without somebody coming over to you and talking to you and asking you for things. It's so important
that you never put your kids' pictures or your puppies' pictures on social media. It's super important. Because if the bad guys want to get you, they can get you. It's just that simple. And I talked about that in the security audio I did. And this gal, she was like, how dangerous really is it? Like, you talked about it, so it was dangerous. And I said, well, what you need to do is, I can tell you how dangerous it is all until I'm blue in the face. And in your mind, you're going to say, oh, my community's not like that. I'm fine. I'm safe. What I want you to do is, I want you to go to a bank. Go to your favorite bank. You know the bank people there. You've been going to the bank. And ask to speak to the branch manager. And then ask that branch manager, how often high wealth people have their kids kidnapped? How often do high wealth people have somebody in their lives kidnapped? Because the bank is the first person that's going to know, not the police. People will go to the bank. They won't go to the police. They'll go to the bank to get all their money out. If it's several million dollars, the branch manager has to be the one to approve the transfer of money. The branch manager is going to know how many people have in that town have been, you know, how often do they get that? And if she asks you, or he asks you, well, why do you want to know? You say, I'm about to get a very large inheritance. I'm not really sure, you know, about security. So I'm just kind of curious. I figure you might know your branch manager. And they know. And if they'll tell you, you will leave the bank and you will go get it. You will hire security. It's that common. You just don't hear about it. It's not a pleasant crime. It news has this thing, especially our fucking mainstream media pieces of shit. If it doesn't bleed, it doesn't lead. So unless a ransom goes wrong and somebody dies like JonBenet Ramsey or something like that, you never hear about how often people are held for a ransom for either somebody they love or a pet. It happens with pets a lot. So wealth can be an extreme blessing. But if you're not ready for the trappings of it, it can be a curse. Think very carefully about what you're about to do. I don't want anything to be talked out of what I want you to do, but I do need you to understand what you're about to step into and take appropriate measures.
Can I ask a question, please?
No, you can't. No. Damn it. I lost my train of thought.
You're going to take things a lot more seriously after you go to the bank and speak and find out how often people
are. I will seriously block and kick you. I have a disability, and my disability involves memory, and I'm struggling really hard to give you this information. I ask that you keep your mouth shut so I can get through this. Please. You have to decide where your level of comfort is and work within it. You have to be a realist about your security. And if you go to the bank and you find out that there's been a lot of kidnappings, then you have to make sure you're safe.
this lady is, I mean, she found out that it was like, she thought, well, our town probably, you know, we're a little town. We don't have that many kidnappings. And she went and talked to a branch manager, and the branch manager said that they had 13 kidnappings in the year before. This is a town of like 15, 16,000 people. So a very small amount of people and a massive number of kidnappings and people being held for ransom or items being held for ransom. So you need to make sure that all of the things in your life are secure. Do not wait to have security for children. If you don't feel comfortable with security, talk to your security staff about how can you make yourselves less visible in my life so I don't feel like I'm being drowned by people around me. It's the weirdest thing to have security in your house all the time. I couldn't handle it. My security doesn't come into my house. My security has an outside facility where they can get in and out, be comfortable. It's almost like a cabana where they can get in and out and be comfortable, but they're basically keeping guard over the property. By making those arrangements with your security, if you think you're going to be uncomfortable, you have to talk to both your kids and the security company that you're using and set up ways for them to become, quote, invisible in your life. As time goes on, that feeling like, why the fuck are you here? Leaves. Because they become your friends. They become people that you talk to all the time. These are people that will literally take a bullet for you. These are literally people that will jump into a moving car to get your kid back. Your security is important. And if your security is going to make you afraid, then think about a different way to do this. Think about a different way to do your project where you can be a ghost, where you completely be out of the public limelight. If that means you have to pick up and move to another city, then do it. But you've got to get yourself over a fear if you have that fear of, oh my God, now I'm going to impact my whole life. Deal with it now, because once this happens and everything gets real, you won't have time to deal with it. So consider all of that stuff now, because it's coming, folks, and you're not going to have free time like we're having right now. Everybody's going to be pulling on you every different direction. That's what I was trying to say. I apologize for being bitchy and cranky, but I really cannot handle it if I'm in the middle of it, if I'm struggling to try to put the words in, because I'm struggling trying to get the right memory to come up. So I apologize for whoever I snapped at. I just needed a minute, that's all. So forgive me. Now, did you want to say what you wanted to say? Please do.
Please do.
Yes, I apologize deeply. What about when you have grandkids in college? How do you keep them safe? Do you have a security person around them all the time?
I have two grandchildren that I am pretty sure my daughter is going to just scream with what I'm going to do. And I don't give a fuck because they're my grandkids.
Right.
I am going to have security for my grandkids, whether or not my daughter is okay with it. Because those are the very people. My grandson is a year and a half old. He can't protect himself. And she thinks that she can protect herself from a bad day. When people come to you to have a bad day, it's not one person. They're there to overwhelm you, take whatever the fuck they want, and be gone. She thinks because she served in the military, she could protect my grandson. I don't think so. When people come to have a bad day, there's 5, 6, 7 of them. You can't protect yourself. So she's going to have security no matter what. It's easier if she agrees, but if she doesn't, I don't care. It's not negotiable.
So you would have with them all the time at the college campus?
My grandkids are under 5 years old.
Yeah, but I'm
an adult. I don't have an adult child in college. Okay. It's not really something I thought of yet, so let me have a think about this.
Okay.
If my child was a delightful ditz, I'm going to school, life is good, ha ha ha, I would have security.
Okay. I have one only kind of similar to that, but not quite that bad, but yeah, there's, yeah.
I think that even if I had a strong child that was aware of their surroundings, I think I would probably have part-time security for them. Just depends on the kid, depends on the wealth. So okay. I think that's one of those things you got to kind of figure out as you go. But if it's a ditz, oh, God help you. Yeah.
Well, she's not a ditz, but she has one of those minds of her own. She's, she graduated with honors from high school. But, again,
yeah,
it's a girl.
I already know. Here's the other thing. If it's a male or female child and they cannot look away from their cell phone, those kids are perfect targets.
Yeah, that's kind of the way she is some of the time. But she's kind of gotten away from it to a certain degree, but at the same token, no, she's,
I would have security.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. My grandson's, he's pretty good. He's, 6'3", but at the same token, I think it would be good just to have him, watch periodically.
What you want to do with security and kids is you want your security, the person who does their security, you get them used to being around that person. You have them take the kid to school. You have the security, you attach the security guy to good things. And pretty soon they want to be around the security guy all the time. So the security guy takes him to school. The security guy says, hey, you want to go get a Slurpee? The security guy arranges little short trips for the child to be more comfortable around the security person. If the child likes the security person and feels like all good things come, many good things come from the security person, then they are a lot less likely to revolt and say, I don't like you. You can't be with me. I had a client that happened to the security. Oh my God. The guy that she hired, I swear to God, he looked like a small mountain moving through the room. He was the biggest ape I ever saw. I mean, massive. He looked like was a former lineman for a football team. Massive guy. This guy scared her son to death. Just his size. And he would see this guy and he would just scream. This little kid would scream, scared silly. And so it's like, she's like, how can I get my son to be used to the security? I go, it's not the security. It's that agent. You need to change agents or have that agent start bringing ice cream or bringing, whatever the kid likes to every time he shows up. Well, a couple weeks later, she calls me up and she goes, she fucking loves this guy. They go to the bounce house together every Friday. I said, beautiful. So you just have to make sure that your child is comfortable with security.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it. And by the way, I just want to commend you on everything that you're doing. You're excellent at this. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome, sweetie.
So that's basically it. I just wanted to talk about, yeah, just a minute, Natalie. I just wanted to talk about the impact of wealth on pets and kids. I know we talked about security and all that kind of stuff, but I would encourage people, if you have a pet that you love, that you hire someone to be with that animal all the time. And that way that pet always has someone watching over it. Pets are easier to steal for some reason. I don't know why they fucking steal dogs all the time, but pets are easier to steal than kids. So if you have an animal that, like me, I would freaking die if something happened to Maga. As much as she runs through the mud and plays in the mud and tramps mud all through the house and makes my life crazy, I freaking love this dog. And I came to the conclusion today that the best way I can keep her safe for the rest of her life, especially because I'm planning on doing so much traveling, is I have to find a home for her. And that's how I'm going to keep her safe. So consider your animals, folks. They're not something to be taken lightly of, especially if they're something you love. So somebody had another question.
Hi, Parker. What do you suggest when you have kids between 20 and 30?
Kick them out of the house.
I can't do that yet.
It's an idea. You didn't see if it was a good idea. So the kids that age, there's some couple of things you're going to do. You're about to start a family governance, okay?
Okay.
Now you have to get their buy-in. They need to want to be in there. So ask them what kind of projects they want to do. Were you on here earlier when I was talking to the lady about family governance and how she has a small family? Okay. That's the same kind of a thing. So what you do is you find out what they want to do, what they really like. Okay. And then you scaffold what they like with someone who's an expert in their field. And you have your child and that mentor start that business under the banner of the family governance. Now what you've got is buy-in, and the kid wants to do the quote work. Because if it's something they want, it's no longer work. It brings them joy. If you have an agent that's working with your child, a mentor that's working with your child, that mentor is going to bring them faster successes. The more successes your kids have, the more they want to be involved in family governance and measures of success. So when you start this, you know, when you start your project on that day, I'm going to buy you a new car. You can choose between these models. When you open your business on that day, I'm going to have, and you set up goals, you set up awards for however you want to set it up. This continues to keep the kids focused until one day it's like, fuck, you don't need awards because they're breathing it. They're living it. They're living the dream. That's what they want to do.
That's a great idea. Thank you.
You're welcome. I love these questions because I forget that I know this stuff.
Parker, I have a question. My mom lives in a senior 55 and over, like a modular home park. Do I hire security for the park so they can keep an eye on it? And that way it'd be less obvious.
Wow, that's a great question. Wow, okay. So med beds are going to happen. So is your mother in the park because she wants to live in the park, or is she physically disabled?
No, she wants in the park because there's no kids. It's quiet.
I would hire security for the park. That way she is not exposed, especially because I know my generation, we're all little old ladies, okay? And we want to know shit. So she's going to have a snoopy little lady across the street going, why has she got a young man in her house all the time? She must be doing the wrong thing. You don't want to have that. So I think you're absolutely right. I think I would hire for the entire community. And what I would do is I would write that into a project
as care for the seniors, and then have security, hire security to protect other seniors and other 55 area communities in your city. Two birds, one stone.
Yeah, thank you.
Welcome. Garden Chef is one of our amazing, amazing administrators. I just love her. Thank you for asking the question in here. Anybody else have questions?
Just a quick one. I came in late. All the forms that you were downloading, where do I go to so I can print all those out?
There is three little dots at the top of your computer or your phone. And you click on those dots and it will give you access to the files in the Telegram. Other than that, I don't know shit about Telegram and I can't tell you how to find it.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
I don't even know if that's right information, but I think so.
Again, we'll play by ear.
Absolutely, because that's how I get around. I'm embarrassed. I suck at computers. Does anybody else have any questions?
I have one about the security. Sure. Could you give us maybe some tips on, with the exception of the social media is kind of obvious, but how do we go about living as a ghost?
Ooh, that's a good question. Okay. I know this is going to sound funny, but banks are whores. Literally. Banks always and forever, they want to have their face on everything. So the best way to be hidden in your community is go to your branch, go to your bank and say, I'm a humanitarian. This is the money that I have. This is the project that I have. And I want the community to think that this bank is doing it because I'm going to hide behind you. And your bank will go, baby, what do you want us for? What do you want from us? They live for that kind of positive notoriety. What are your projects, dear?
Well, we want to do a med bed center that would eventually morph into, first we want it to be just for the kids. My son was born with cancer, so that's where that comes from. But eventually morph into a bigger type of project where we have food. We teach them how to not only get healthy, but then stay healthy and have a learning center, how to grow your own food, and kind of empowering you rather than, you know, all the convenience foods. Empower ourselves back to figure out how to do stuff for ourselves and stop depending on everyone else.
I think that there's a way to do that. But I don't know. I think that you can have the bank set up a community center and have it look like it's the bank's community center. And then you sit on the board as the board of directors, the head of the board of directors, chairman of the board. And you can guide the bank on how to do that, whatever you want done. But to the world, it looks like it's the bank's project. It's a community project for the bank. And that way you just look like you're an employee as far as anybody else is concerned. All of the ceremonies, all the stuff that you give away to the people, whatever you do, you can be there at all of those events, but you're not the one giving the gift away. It's the people at the bank.
We were going to kind of go bigger than that. I'm not sure how we hide behind it. We were going to have, you know, not just growing the food, but then people come in with lessons, and we were going to, you know, after there's a bunch of people healed, you know, like 5 years down the road, maybe open it up, try to be like this resort type healing, holistic, all kinds of natural healing things.
Yeah, you can hire people to do all that, to work in those facilities. Are you wanting yourself to be working in the facility?
We were wanting to be a part of it, but now with the security, it's kind of, I'm one of those that's freaking out a little bit.
Well, what you want to do is you want to make yourself look like an employee. You never tell anybody it's your foundation if you're worried about, if you make yourself look like an employee. Set up a foundation, make it look like you're the CEO. But even then, CEOs are going to have problems. They're going to be targets. They're going to assume you, if this is a major foundation, they're going to assume you're making millions. You're going to still be a target. So have a CEO that you're working with that's the acting face of the company, and let him be in front of everything. You and him work side by side away from the limelight. You have a home office that he comes to and he spends, you know, half a day there or a day there or whatever. But if you're truly concerned about safety, and it's about not letting the public know how much money you make. So if you're operating under the auspices of, actually what you could do is you could tell everybody that you're his secretary, and nobody except for you and him would know, no, I'm the boss. That way it would explain why you're always together.
That's a really good idea. I would have never thought of that.
When I travel to countries in Asia, my security guard, he is the owner of the company. They have no idea. My name's Parker. That's my real first name. And so they never, ever, ever think Parker's a girl. Never. Nobody does. So my security agent operates as the owner of my company, and I'm his secretary. I've done it multiple times. We have a whole code of speaking to each other in front of people, that if I use a certain word, that means cut the deal off, don't do it. We can speak in code to people right in front of you, and you would never know that we're having an entire conversation that you have no idea about. But yeah, you can do that with your security guard. My security guard was badass. He was really good at it.
That's great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, we spoke in letters, different letters, you would say. You'd say ND. It means it's not done. I don't want that agreement. Renegotiate. We spoke in little letters, whisper little letters. People would like, they never had any idea. Any other questions? Well, folks, I think this is going to pretty much wind it up. This really wasn't the format I was trying to work on. It kind of worked out the way it did. I still believe that we are 48 hours or less from getting our notices. I'm going to do one last quick look to see if I got any other information since we've been on here. I'm trying not to look at my email all day. Holy shit, I got the dates. Okay, folks, I have to end this because I cannot have what I'm about to say on this recording. Oh, Heavenly Father, thank you. Thank you, Lord Jesus, for the blessings we're about to receive. God, put your hand on the hearts of these humanitarians and help them rise to the occasion. In your heavenly name, I pray. Amen.